Cybersecurity Month, everyone. And look, I got you an encrypted podcast. If you listen to it backwards, it says, "The fish is dead." Okay, not really. Hi there. Welcome, everyone. What we've got here is a brand new episode of Amelia's Weekly Fish Fry, brought to you by EEJournal.com and hosted by yours truly, Amelia Dalton. Today, we are talking about intellectual property theft, software piracy, and what we can do about it. Please welcome Ted Morocco from SmartFlow Compliance and David Locke Hall to Fish Fry to talk about all of this and more. Hi, Ted. Thank you so much for joining me.
Hi, Amelia. It's great to be here.
Okay, so first off, for my audience who may not know, give me a reminder about what SmartFlow Compliance is all about.
SmartFlow Compliance is a cybersecurity company that is focused on protecting software intellectual property from unlicensed use or commercial overuse. So we are really in the anti-piracy space, and we try to protect software companies from unauthorized use of their intellectual property.
So, Ted, it does seem that we haven't quite solved all of the problems around intellectual property theft and piracy, right? What are you seeing as the biggest challenges in this realm these days?
Yes, we still have a lot of work to do. So SmartFlow is a startup company, and we've been at it now for, we're into our fifth year, trying to fight the software piracy epidemic. The BSA has just published their most recent statistics, and about 37% of all software that's being used is being used without a license. So the challenge is, how do you identify these people who are using unlicensed software? That's the first challenge. And then, even if you can identify them, how do you convince them to pay for something that they have very easy access to free copies on the internet? So there are a lot of pirate sites that are out there, and Dave Hall, one of our guests who will be speaking at the summit, is somewhat famous for taking down one of these sites. But the minute you take down a site, a new one pops up, and there's just plenty of opportunity for people to install and use free software. And we're going to try to address that problem at the anti-piracy summit that we're hosting October 10th and 11th.
So, David, let me ask this question to you as well. What particular challenges are you seeing in this realm these days?
Well, the challenges are, from my point of view, and keep in mind, I'm not a software genius like Ted. I'm a simple country lawyer and a retired prosecutor. And from my point of view, the challenge has remained constant in the sense that it hasn't been solved. I tend to look at things from the point of view as a former prosecutor and ask the question, what can the government do to address this problem, which really is epidemic, as Ted points out. It's pretty much out of control. And the answer is the government's not doing very much. The government has enough problems just trying to improve its own cybersecurity and is not really taking material steps to take care of the problem of theft of intellectual property from private parties.
Absolutely. So, Ted, let's talk more about that anti-piracy summit you're co-hosting with Synopsys. Now, I would imagine that this summit would cross over into a lot of different kinds of software.
Yeah, it does. Now, a lot of our audience is focused in the engineering space. We really got our bearings in the electronic design automation space, but we today have a number of clients, and this particular summit is going to be very heavy in the mechanical engineering and the computer-aided design space, as well as other technologies. You know, so we will have enterprise software developers, we will have people who develop applications for architectural engineering, chemical engineering. Generally, we focus on high-value software applications. We're less concerned about the consumer or the gaming area. It's not really our sweet spot. Our sweet spot is really the desktop applications that tend to be expensive and used by businesses. And the threat to our economy is that you have a lot of companies that use illegal software as a competitive advantage. They endanger, you know, the jobs of engineers, and they endanger, you know, the jobs of corporations that play by the rules and do properly license all of the software that's used in developing high-tech products. It is a big issue, and yeah, there are national security issues, there are cybersecurity issues, there are data privacy issues that all come up at the conference. We try to bring together, you know, the best legal minds, the best technologists, and the best business people should try to formulate a plan that takes into account all three of those disciplines and can boil it down into coherent policies that companies can implement right away that will generate revenue for our clients.
Ted made the point about the type of software that he's focused on and that the conference is focused on, and mentioned that there was a national security implication to all this. And I just wanted to amplify that the type of software he's talking about does frequently have a direct national security application and is used as really part of the infrastructure that is used by the military both to design weapon systems and to actually implement weapon systems. So the loss of that intellectual property is an economic loss. It's a theft of property from private companies that have spent a lot of money to develop it. But it's also there's also a public component to that, in that the loss of that software has a negative national security implication.
So, Dave, let's talk a little bit more about your talk at this year's summit. Now, it will revolve around what the government is or is not doing to help this problem, correct?
That's right. I think a lot of people, and including me, tend to look to the government to solve these sorts of problems. I mean, particularly given that there's a national security implication. The truth is the government has not been able to muster its resources in a way that effectively addresses this problem. As a result, you can see that the level of effort exerted by the government in law enforcement is actually very low. Just to give you a perspective, in a typical year, there are about 13,000 drug offenses prosecuted by the federal government. This is just the federal government I'm talking about. And in contrast, last fiscal year, there were only 165 cases brought by the Department of Justice that qualified as what they defined as computer fraud. Within the category of computer fraud, theft of intellectual property is probably a small minority of the cases, because computer fraud, if you think about it, is quite a broad category, and yet they're only bringing, you know, less than 1%, you know, by comparison, only 1% of the number of drug prosecutions are being brought as computer fraud prosecutions. So it's actually very low statistical output. And then if you think about it qualitatively, there have been some notable intellectual property theft cases over the last 10 years or so, and particularly targeting foreign wrongdoers. But the government's success rate in arresting those foreign targets is almost zero. The Mega Upload case is a large case that involves the theft of audio and video recordings that are available on the internet. And it was a case that was indicted to much fanfare, but the ringleader, Kim.com, still hasn't been extradited. They're still fighting that in New Zealand. They've only actually arrested one person in that whole case. There are a number of other examples of that where, for example, the indictment of the five People's Liberation Army officers who were hacking U.S. companies and, interestingly, stealing economic data. In other words, information that was going to be useful to Chinese company in competing against the U.S. companies like Westinghouse, for example. None of those PLA officers have been arrested. So it's not a stellar record that the government has posted in this area.
So Ted, let's talk a little bit more about the Anti-Piracy Summit. Now, if someone in my audience was interested in attending, where would they go for more information?
They should go to our website, smartflowcompliance.com. And they need to request an invitation. So one of the things about the summit is it is an invitation-only event. We try to control the audience because obviously we wouldn't want to let the wolf into the hen house. We really restrict the attendance to companies that are legitimately developing this type of intellectual property and have been victims of this kind of crime. But we do have a few spaces open, and we are very interested in bringing in corporations that are interested in addressing this problem. And I can tell you that those that do attend will learn that there are very real solutions to this problem. You know, a lot of people think piracy is a kind of foregone conclusion, and it's not. We have the technology and we have the know-how, and at the conference we're going to discuss best practices, and we're going to help people actually take the concrete steps that are necessary to first secure their intellectual property and then track it and then protect it and figure out how to take the necessary action, whether it's legal action or business negotiations, to convert these unlicensed users into hopefully happy, well-supported customers in the future. We encourage people to check out our website and find out more about it.
Okay, cool. Well, Ted, it's time for your off-the-cuff question this time around. Now, I don't think I've ever asked you this before. So if you had one last meal on planet Earth, that's it. That's all you get for the rest of your life. What would it be?
Rigatoni bolognese. I love Italian food, and Yeah, my wife and I have come up with our own recipe of rigatoni bolognese with rosemary and garlic, and that would be it. That would be my last meal.
That sounds delicious, and I think it's time for lunch. So I think that's all I have time for today. Thank you so much for joining me, Dave and Ted.
Excellent. Thank you, Amelia.
Thank you, Amelia.
So are we going to need cybersecurity for our brains? I know, sometimes you just cannot unsee something, right? Like that one meme on Facebook. You know the one. No, not exactly like that. Let me take a step backward here and introduce you to BrainNet. Yes, this week's news you may have missed is brought to you by Cornell University and their new brain-to-brain communication system. Yes, and this communication system does involve sending messages using just brainwaves. Well, and some wires were involved as well. So, this is how this project worked. Three different subjects were chosen. Two were selected as the senders and outfitted with electroencephalograms, or EEGs, which included electrodes placed on their heads. With the addition of these electrodes, the EEG is able to record the electrical activity in the brain. So, these brain waves from the senders were then decoded and sent to a receiver who had been outfitted with some TMS gear, or transcranial magnetic stimulation equipment, which sends precise magnetic pulses into the brain. Okay, so you know what kind of test they used to see if this brainwave social network was working? Tetris. Yes. Okay, so the two people outfitted as senders in this project could see the screen with the falling block. Yes, if you're like me, you can hear that old Nintendo music in your head right now. Okay, so only the senders could see that falling block, but they could not actually control it. That's up to the third person, the receiver. Now, the receiver must rely on the other players to tell them whether to rotate the block or not to get it to fit into the line below. So, how is this actually done? So keep in mind that all three test subjects were in separate rooms and could only communicate using this BrainNet system. So, first, the senders each stare at LEDs on the side of their Tetris screens. One of the LEDs flashed at 15 hertz, while the other blinked at 17. So why the blinking lights? Well, apparently, when a subject watches these lights, the lights actually cause brain waves to pulse at the same frequency. And the two senders' EEG systems can pick up on those brain waves and use that information for decision making. So, in this case, the 15 hertz meant rotate the block, and the 17 hertz meant don't rotate the block. If BrainNet picked up a 15 hertz signal, it would then send that information to the receiver's TMS system and then send a pulse into the sender's brain. So that pulse actually triggers a flash of light that only the receiver sees, thus telling him or her to rotate the block accordingly. You guys, I don't need to tell you this, but this is some crazy stuff. So if you want even more information about this study by Cornell University, I've included a couple links below the player with more information, including a link to a white paper entitled BrainNet, a multi-person brain-to-brain interface for direct collaboration between brains. Yes. Hey, have you checked out EE Journal on social media yet? Well, you should. You can find us at facebook.com/EEJournal. If you're into Twitter, you can monitor our tweets at EEJournalTFM. Always good stuff in there. And if LinkedIn is more your thing, well, sure, you can follow us on LinkedIn as well. And we have a YouTube channel, keyword EE Journal. You guys, it is chock full of all kinds of super cool techie videos, including our very popular Chalk Talk webcast series hosted by me. And you can subscribe to our EE Journal YouTube channel as well. Also, by clicking the links below the player on this week's Fish Frying page, you can check out the Fish Fry archive or subscribe to Fish Fry via the iTunes Store. And remember, if you want any further information about the stories covered in today's show, just head on over to eejournal.com and look for this week's Fish Frying page. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. If you know of any cool new technology, any fun EE conference coming up that I absolutely should attend, or even the best geeky hotspot in your city, shoot me a line at amelia@eejournal.com or post a comment on our forums on EE Journal. For the week of October 5th, 2018, I'm Amelia Dalton, and you've been fried.